Please welcome Michael Kaplan.
Okay, this is really odd. I'm going to tell you up front. I feel like a cover band that is performing one of Gene Melter's songs. And you'll understand why. If you were a teenager growing up in the 70s in Southern California, there was really only one test. And it wasn't the SATs, and it wasn't advanced placement, it was the Department of Motor Vehicles driver's test. And I'm really intrigued by the fact that there's a lot of data and a lot of research now showing that young people today are waiting longer and longer to get their driver's license, if they do it at all. But in the pre-internet, pre-Uber, pre-smartphone era, if you waited even a week past your 16th birthday and you remained dependent on rides from your mom and your older sister, you were basically advertising to the world, I am still a child. And this was a particular issue for me because I was the youngest in my class and the last to turn 16. I was really champing at the bit. My mother was a little less thrilled with the prospect. At one point, she said to me, you know, Eileen Jacobson is worried that you're going to be having so many creative ideas while you're driving, you'll get distracted and have an accident. We just take a moment to acknowledge how incredibly unhelpful that comment was. And how Eileen Jacobson ended up with a vote regarding our family business, I still don't know, but I digress. Eileen Jacobson and my mother could not stop the march of time. It was going to happen. And I went to a private school. There was no driver's education. All of my friends, all of my classmates, apparently, they all had the same driving instructor. And so my parents set me up for 8 45-minute lessons with Vince Gambizotti. Vince looked like he'd probably been in the mob at some point. And he sounded like he was kicked out of the mob for never shutting up. He was a wall-to-wall monologue. It began the moment I got in the car and he presented me with the overarching metaphor for his instruction. You ever play basketball, buddy? You're on the court, you gotta be aware. You gotta be aware where everybody is. It's just like that when you're driving, you gotta be aware. And then from there, it would be the nonstop critique of all the other drivers on the road, jokes that I never found funny, but that didn't matter because he always cracked himself up. Occasional bits of instruction, which most of the time were simply, ease up, buddy, ease up, ease up. And then whatever else came into his damn head. My third lesson, he spent the entire 45 minutes telling me the storyline to The Razor's Edge by Somerset Maugham. And there was no reason for that. It wasn't like I told him, after I get my driver's license, I really hope to reach enlightenment. He just launched into it. So Larry Darrell, he's in a coal mine and he meets a defrocked priest who takes him aside. He says, I got one thing to tell you. That guy's gonna kill somebody. He says, you gotta go to the Himalayas and find the holy man. And so Larry Darrell, look at that ding-a-ling there. So Larry Darrell goes to the Himalayas, he finds the holy man. The holy man says, go to the top of the mountain. You stay there, you'll know when to come down, and that's when you'll be in, like, jeez, pick a lane, lady. Vince was an amazing gift to a 15-year-old who liked to imitate people. My friend Peter and I would constantly look at each other and go, you gotta be aware, you gotta be aware. There was one time in advanced placement English where the teacher asked us a question about Macbeth, and Peter was the only one to raise his hand. And I timed this so perfectly. In the moment just before the teacher turned and called on him, under my breath, I went, "Ease up, buddy, ease up." And the teacher called on him, and instead of saying anything about Macbeth, he began to giggle uncontrollably. And the more the teacher looked at him, baffled and impatient, the harder he laughed. And that was probably my greatest day in high school. The other thing that I appreciated about Vince was that, as far as he was concerned, I could do no wrong, even though I was constantly doing wrong and driving a lethal weapon. But, you know, he'd tell me to change up what I was doing, and I would, and then he would just beam and act like I was, you know, just a genius behind the wheel. And this was in stark contrast to my father, who every Sunday would strap himself into the passenger seat and white-knuckle it while I drove him around West Los Angeles. And, you know, I don't know if it was the power of suggestion, but he would say things like, "You're going to hit the curb," and then I would hit the curb. And then he would call Vince frustrated and go over his list of things that I had to work on. But then the point came, I turned 16, Vince took me to the DMV, I took the written test, I got 100, I did the driving test, 97. And Vince was like, "You know, oh geez, you ought to be giving them the test." He drops me off at home, and I'm just flying, and I say to my mom, "I got to borrow your car. I want to go to the library. I got to do some research for Speech and Debate." She says, "Be careful." And in a moment of classic hubris, I said, "Mom, I got a 97. And so I drive to the library, which is on a fairly busy street, and I turn in to the narrow parking lot entrance, and I've waited too long, and I've overshot. And now I'm sitting there in no man's land, and I'm not sure how to play this. And you know, overall, I have a problem with institutions that just teach the test. You know, yeah, I learned about broken white lines and the broken yellow lines and how to make a left turn, but, you know, that didn't matter. Okay, it did matter. I could wipe you all out, I guess, if I hadn't learned that. But more to the point, nobody teaches you, when you make a bonehead move, how to correct it. And as far as I can tell, I've got two options. One is to back all the way out into busy oncoming traffic and then continue to back up so that I can make that turn again from the proper distance. Or I can give it a little gas and a hard right turn and basically apply a chiropractic adjustment to the situation and get my car in alignment. And that seemed like a much more reasonable approach. So I gave it gas, turned the wheel, and plowed right into a middle pole. I had my driver's license for less than an hour, and I've crunched my mother's car. And so I'm driving home ashamed, doomed, full of dread. It feels like my life is over. I get home, I come inside, my mother's there, I tell her what's happened. She gives a little grimace and says, "Eileen was right." Who gave Eileen Jacobson the power? I don't know. Who decided she was the prophet, the oracle for our household? It still bothers me to this day. But I digress. The point is, she was of no help. So I call Vince. "Hey, buddy, Mr. 97, how you doing?" "Vince, not so good. I drove my mom's car to the library, and I hit a pole." "Oh, geez, you hit a pole. You hit a pole. Was his name Stokowski?" He was no help either. Amazingly, support came from the last place that I expected it. My mom told me, my dad was on the phone. She told him what had happened. I got on the phone and he was laughing. And he said, "Hey, we're not gonna disinherit you. I'm sure you're gonna learn from this." And that was really wonderful. To this day, I really appreciate that Dad did that. And he was right. I did learn from it. I went 32 years without an accident, only broke my streak after my daughter's piano lesson when I backed the minivan into a tree and shattered the rear window. And again, I feel that we have to do more than teach the test. We need to let these young drivers know about the peril, the real danger of these stationary objects. Thank you.